Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.
Everybody, this is Harvey Sluggo Waxman back with you for another hour at the Green Power and Wellness Show. We are once again going to do the Zoom call that we've been running for the last 6 months on protecting our election. This is number 28, and we are really heavily focused in on Georgia. We have the truly great Andrea Miller to talk about getting out the vote in Georgia and monitoring the registrations. We also have Ray McClendon from the Atlanta NAACP, Danny Paul Sheehan from the Dakota Pipeline Fight. You know, the indigenous really mobilized this last election. They were calling indigenous communities all over the country and made a significant and maybe even a decisive difference in the state of Arizona. And we're joined by Hedy Tripp, who will talk to us about the movement of Muslims, Muslim organizations to bring out the vote among their folks and also among South Asians, especially South Asian women. This is a really action-packed, incredibly important discussion of how we're going to deal with the special election in Georgia. Please do join us. It runs an hour. If you want to go for the last half hour, you can go to grassrootsep.org, grassrootsep.org. If you want to write me directly, I am at solartopia@gmail.com. Harvey Waxman at solartopia@gmail.org. I will send you a free PDF of my history book, The People's Spiral of U.S. History, the pre-Trump departure edition. We do celebrate Trump finally acknowledging that the transition has to proceed, and we're also happy to see Dianne Feinstein removing herself from the minority chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. So this is, again, Zoom 28 of the Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition. Write me for the rest of it, solartopia@gmail.com. And thank you so much, PRN, for running this. Jesse, your work is great. And now take a listen in.
Hey, everybody. This is Harvey Sluggo Waxman back for another magnificent Zoom call on from the Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition. This is our 28th, not counting our Zoom calls. We've engineered by Mike Hirsch with Steve Caruso helping on board. And we got co-convened by Joel Siegel. And we're also joined by Bob Fitrakis, our money man and our attorney in residence. We have a full agenda, mostly focused in the beginning on Georgia, of course, of their reports from Michigan and Wisconsin that we want to get in up front. I do want to respond. We had a wonderful, I put out a survey for feedback. And I want to just lay out real quickly, less than 5 minutes, basically where we stand on these calls. We are going to continue these calls every week, same time, same place, through January 20th. And once we're convinced that there's been a change in the White House, we will go twice a month. These calls are primarily, and have been all along, primarily a forum. They're informational. There was some frustration expressed about not taking action. What we do with this call is we do not want to form an organization that takes action. What we want is to have everybody who's taking action present what they're doing. We've had an absolute run of geniuses and magnificent organizers on these calls. So rather than go through the difficult motions of taking action ourselves, what we want to do is present actions that are being taken, groups that are out there in the field, in the trenches, that are doing what needs to be done. For example, Ray McClendon is here from the NAACP. We're going to have very quickly a report from Andrea Miller from People Demanding Action. Lulu is with us. I mean, we have a tremendous collage here of people who go out and are making the changes at the grassroots. And so that's the format that we take. We also do not raise money on this call, but we do allow people to raise money for their own groups. We're making available, we have a 501c3 with Bob Fetrakis, and he'll be on and he can post in the chat how to get money through his organization. We actually have funneled, or as the Trump team was saying, laundered money through Bob's 501c3. He's an attorney and they've been running it for quite a long while. If you want to donate to a group that's taking action, contact Bob, contact the group, make the connection, and that's how the money can flow. So action, you want to take action? Absolutely, this is an action call, except that the actions are taken through the organizations and the people individually that present. For example, Emily Levy's scrutineers, more than welcome to join them, more than welcome to send money to them, however you want to do it. And we have Tatanka on from the Indigenous, along with Danny Paul. We have Howie Hawkins at the Green Party, if you want to support them. Ray Lutz and John Brakey, their work. All these groups are available to send money and to support and to work with them, especially now that we're into Georgia, where we definitely have action groups on the call that you can support and that you can join in with. We successfully brokered, for example, a group of about 30 people from Topanga Canyon to call in with Andrea's group and things like that. Do you have any questions about that? I will certainly continue to convene these calls with Joel, with Mike, Steve Caruso, Bob Fetrakis, and we'll go that route through at least January 20th, and then we'll reevaluate. One thing this call does focus on, we will be doing a handbook on how to reform the election system for the next 4 years. This is a four-year commitment. You know, I will say without hesitation that the election this year, because of paper ballots, if we had not had paper ballots in this election, which has been a prime demand of the election protection movement at least for 20 years, and if this election had not been conducted by mail, it had not been conducted on paper ballots, there would have been a very different result. So if we're going to want paper ballots again in 2024, we're going to have to fight for them. Okay, is there anybody want to jump in?
Harvey?
Yes.
Harvey, I thought you were going to form a listserv or something for the people that wanted to work on that project, the reform going forward. I haven't seen anything.
Yes, we'll do that at the top of the hour. Give us another hour. When we get there, we will do what we need to do.
Okay, great.
I was making, in the process of making calls to Georgia voters through Sierra Club when I switched over to this, because I didn't remember what this was all about. But I'd like to get back there and call some more of these voters.
Go for it. You can listen to it. This is recorded. It's available at grassrootsep.org.
Okay, good.
It's also broadcast, podcast on the Progressive Radio Network on Thursday at 5 p.m.
All right, hold on a second. Grassroots. All right, give me that website again.
PRN.FM is the radio. Grassroots EP is now and has been our website right from the start.
Grassroots what?
EP.
E as in echo.
P as in protection.
Grassroots EP what? Dot what?
O-R-G.
Dot O-R-G. Okay.
Okay. Does anyone else? Thank you very much. See you later. Does anyone else have anything to add before we jump into the actual call? We're up to 91 people. It's great to have you all. I am thrilled. So we're going to start in Georgia with Andrea Miller, and then we're going to talk to Ray McClendon and then Cheryl Moses, all in Georgia, on the ground, doing what needs to be done. I do want to announce very quickly that within the past hour, the Michigan board of whatever it is in Michigan has certified the Michigan election. We can all throw stuff in the air. There were two Republicans, two Democrats, and one of the Republicans voted to certify, and the other abstained. So Michigan basically is done. Lulu Friestad, you wanted to give us a quick report on Wisconsin, please. Lulu is one of the great organizers on election protection. She runs a call of her own. So before we jump in, she has to go. So before we jump into Georgia, Lulu, there you are. And can you tell us what you know from Wisconsin?
Thanks, Harvey. I'll just give you a brief rundown. I spoke with Karen McKim in Wisconsin last night, and she said that it's quite possible that about 200,000 votes could be disqualified. They're votes from people who voted as indefinitely confined. And it's a very particular categorization, which is specifically set up primarily for people with disabilities or the elderly who really can't get out. And unfortunately, the Democrats encouraged people to use that category in order to sidestep the requirement for voter identification. It's the only way really to vote in Wisconsin without voter identification. And so it's quite possible that those votes could be disqualified. So Karen has very kindly written up a description of what happened and what the potential consequences could be. And we'll have that up on our blog at smartelections.us by tomorrow. And then I just also wanted to say that we're still working on comparing the poll tape photos that we got to election results. It's a huge, huge undertaking. We've never done anything like this in this amount of time. We've transcribed, I think, around 600 poll tapes in, we did the transcription in less than a week, but the actual comparison is very time consuming because we have to compare each poll tape to actual election results. And even though we're doing it in bulk on spreadsheets, it has to be done meticulously. And we would very, very, very much like help if people would like to help with that. It's important that the project be completed so that we can show the public that this is something that's actually meaningful and that we don't just stop halfway and that we get it done prior to certification so it's still meaningful. So please, if you have some time and would like to help us, we could use people with any number of skills, and you can sign up at countthevote.info. Thank you for giving me the time, Harvey.
Okay, put those links in the chat, please.
Yes, I will. Thank you.
Who is a major force in this movement, and we're happy to have her on. I've got Andrea waiting. Ruth Strauss and Tatanka, can you be real quick? And then we'll go to Andrea.
I will be real quick. And what I need to say is I want everybody to give a virtual clap for Harvey. He's been wonderful. He's so modest about this, but he's been doing this for years. And if he didn't call, I mean, we do have luminaries like Andrea and Lulu and lots of others. But he's been a wonderful leader, organized, egalitarian. I know you can't stand this, too bad. if it ruins our friendship, I'll go out in glory. Anyway, let's all give a virtual clap for Harvey. And also in the background, Bob Fitrakis, both of them have been doing this for now 20 years. Okay, thank you. Or more.
Thank you, Ruth. I appreciate that much.
Just quickly, Harvey.
Yes.
Tatanka here. After the first three speakers on Georgia, invite Danny Paul because he has a Georgia report. That's all.
Okay, very good. Thank you. And again, please don't drive while you're on the call. Okay, we're going to go to great Andrea Miller. Anybody else real quick? No. Andrea, the floor is yours. People Demanding Action, one of the great groups. And of course, the first step in the trifecta of election protection is the voter registration rolls. And you are the master of voter registration protection and of recruitment. And I have had the good fortune to be able to refer people to work with you through this call. Anybody else wants to do that? You will, of course, show them how. Andrea Miller, the floor is yours, please.
Harvey, thank you very, very much. And yes, my organization, when I do elections, is Center for Common Ground. So People Demanding Action is inactive in federal election years. So later on in 2021, PD Action will be back. Right now, all of our work is Center for Common Ground, which weirdly enough is our 501c3. So far on the ground in Georgia, we have already sent postcards to all 2.7 million active and inactive Georgia voters, making sure they know there will be a Senate runoff election on January 5th. Additionally, I have purchased billboards in the Augusta Market, Metro, Atlanta, in Savannah, and then also in Central Georgia. Our RV is currently down in Central Georgia, where she's going to local organizations, office openings, to Canvas launches, and various things. We are also supporting fish fries at local Black churches. A lot of rural Georgia is food insecure. So if people can get a nice free meal at a local church, they are very, very likely to show up. So we are paying for the food, and then the church is donating the location. The price of admission is, we're going to check your voter registration and make sure your registration is active. And if it is not active, then we are going to work on getting you registered. There are still roughly 1 million voters in Georgia who are not registered. More than half of that 1 million voters were previously registered, and they have been dumped off the rolls. We currently are running text banking to the unregistered voters in Georgia. And what I'm going to do is share my screen. This is what we are looking at in terms of Georgia for GOTV. The larger the circle, the greater the number of voters that did not turn out in the 2020 general. So when we look at Fulton County, there were 807,000 voters who could have voted, 277,000 did not. Fulton, DeKalb, Gwinnett, Cobb, Clayton, and to some degree Rockdale, they basically form Metro Atlanta and her suburbs. Now, where we are working is we are in the Georgia Black Belt. So we are over in Richmond County. That's where Augusta is. We have traveled through Burke. We are also, when we arrived, we were in Houston, Warner Robins, we were in Peach, we were in Macon. So we are concentrating our turnout in the smaller rural Black counties where there really won't be a very large Democratic party, if you will, to do turnout. And so we have purchased, we now have 1.5 million cell numbers for GOTV texting, and our texting will, if people want to early vote, tell them where their latest, their closest early voting location is. And some of these counties are smaller, but what we're going to be looking at is making sure that we don't allow rural Georgia to go bright red. So in so many elections, everybody depends on only this part of Georgia, Atlanta, and they let the rest go fire engine red. We are making sure that Black voters feel comfortable turning out and are aware that there is another election. So what I'm going to do is I will put a link to our analysis map in the chat. And thank you so very much for having me.
Well, Andrea, your work is astounding as far as I'm concerned. I hope you will connect. We're going to have Ray McClendon next speak from the Atlanta NAACP. Does anyone have questions they want to ask Andrea Miller?
The NAACP needs to talk to me. I have 40,000 volunteers. So whatever you need, I have the technology and the people to do it.
Andrea, we have Laura and Jan with questions for you.
Sure.
Laura?
Hi. Hey. Yeah. Hey, hi, Andrea. Hey, babe. So you are fantastic, my dear. So two things, and that is these voters, this car registration thing that Greg Palast has announced today, that you can't register to vote unless you have a registered car in Georgia, if you could please address that.
Yes, and I then, can address that. That
okay, so then, and then, yeah. So hold on, my second question, let me real quick, then I'll get off. And that is that these all of these people that have already been registered and they voted in the in the recent election, they're cool, right? They don't have to go back and register. It's the million that didn't register or were purged before 2020, before November. Is that correct?
All right. Now, there were a record number of provisional ballots cast in the 2020 election. If you were casting a provisional ballot because you were not a registered voter, then you still are going to need to register.
Totally.
So you had people being very nice allowing you to vote by provisional ballot.
Yeah.
Let me tell you what Greg is talking about, and he's not exactly correct. It has always been true in order to register online in Georgia and in most states, you must have a driver's license so they can pull your signature from the DMV. That is not new. It has always been like that. It is like that in Virginia, and Virginia is blue. So, and or if you have a Georgia state ID issued through the Department of Motor Vehicles. Otherwise, you must register to vote on paper, which then gets really interesting, because if you are a rural voter, then number one, you got to somehow get the paper registration form, fill it out, mail it to your county registrar or the Georgia Secretary of State, wherein they tell you it will take you at least 2 to 4 weeks, regardless of how you register, for them to then send you, yeah, you're a registered voter in Georgia. So the driver's license is nothing new. Most states do that. And that's for online registration only.
Andrea, Jan, and then Steve. Jan, go ahead.
Steve. Yes. Okay, so this is not driver's license. This is car registration, because they are afraid, quote, afraid that people are going to be coming into Georgia to vote in the Senate race. So they want proof of residency, and the way that they are demanding proof of residency, and this has happened this morning, so this is very new, that they are requiring that people show that they have a car registered.
And that will immediately be struck down because there is no law that says all Americans must own a car.
Of course, but it's happening as we speak. I mean, it's
it will be struck down as we speak.
Well, let's hope. Let's all.
It will.
Who's I mean, Greg says that, you know, the ACLU is going to be.
The ACLU, the NAACP, there must be 12 groups standing in line with Stacey Abrams and their fight, waiting to file a lawsuit over that.
Okay, I know.
What court will this be heard in? Andrea, what court will this be heard in? Do you know?
I don't really know. It's state law. It's going to definitely go to the Georgia, and again, is it going to go to the Georgia Supreme Court? It's going to be interesting. I don't really know where they're going to hear it. Stephen?
Probably
Steve Kaiser?
Georgia's really famous for driving people off of the voter rolls and costing Stacey Abrams the governorship there. And I'm wondering how practical and how easy is it going to be to get all those people that have been improperly driven off the rolls back on the rolls for this election.
It is going to be impossible. We will get a few. Many of the people do not know they are off the rolls. As I said, there was a record number of provisional ballots. So we are phoning people. We are texting people. People immediately come back and go, oh, no, no, I'm registered to vote. At which point we then urge them to please check the status of your voter registration, because for us, you are showing up as unregistered. The problem is people don't know, and they just don't understand that when you register to vote in most states, you are not registered to vote forever. There is someone who has arrived at, and you must vote in X number of federal elections. And if you don't, we are going to file maintain you off the rolls. Nobody explains that to voters when they register to vote. So people register and they think they're registered forever. And unfortunately, they are not.
It seems like this election is going to pivot on those voters, though, you know. That's going to make a difference. You don't think so?
It will be useful to get more voters. We had so many voters who could have voted and didn't. No, it pivots more on the voters who could have voted and didn't than it really does on the deregistered voters.
In support of, let me just add, Harvey, in support of what Andrea is saying, the turnout in runoffs in Georgia is a peculiar, very peculiar phenomenon where the turnout percentage drops by anywhere from 70 to 90% in some races. So the critical thing here, the number one goal is to get the people who voted in the general, let's get them back out. That's the number one job, because there have been so many races going back 40 years in Georgia where Republicans have come out of the woodwork from several points down, governor's races, secretary of state races, all kinds of races, where they lost, they came in second in the general, and they won in the runoff because Democratic voters don't come back out.
So this is Ray McClendon. Ray is with the political director of the Atlanta NAACP. I understand Ray and Andrea haven't met before, so I'm glad to put you two in touch. I hope you'll exchange contacts, because you two are at the critical vortex here of what's going to happen in Atlanta and in Georgia. Ray, do you want to say something, and then we'll talk to Emily Levy?
Sure. Well, thanks again, Harvey. I appreciate the opportunity.
And Daniel Nelson will be after Emily. Go ahead.
I'm the political action chairman for the NAACP Atlanta branch, and have been working in that capacity now for over 5 years. So my second cycle working in the presidential races here with the NAACP. I really want to just piggyback on a lot of what Andrea has already said, and it's absolutely critical to the fight. We have some great grassroots coalitions that have been building. We've figured out that when we're separated and by ourselves, we cannot nearly be as effective as when we join together and create broad coalitions, particularly in getting the Black vote out. The Black vote doesn't respond to TV ads and so forth in the same way that a lot of other folks might. So it's about a grassroots effort and putting together those coalitions in many of those counties that Andrea described for you. What we've done in the NAACP Atlanta is put together a coalition to look at 19 counties in Georgia that represent 77% of the Black vote, and they are all over the state. Of course, we know about the nine counties or so in Metro, but you also have Chatham County, which was down in the lower right-hand corner of the map that Andrea put up, and a couple of other smaller counties around. You'll normally find that when you have a Chatham, you're also going to have something like Liberty County. So when we go into Chatham, we'll also go into Liberty County and surrounding there. When you look at Central Georgia, you look at Bibb, Houston, et cetera. And that's another large pocket. You go over to Muskogee, which is Columbus, Georgia, and those. You go over into to the east, northeast, with Richmond County, which is Augusta, Clark County, which is Athens. So you, when you pull those counties together, and there are few others that you can add in, we did the research, and that's about 77%. So we, the NAACP has branches in each one of those counties. Also in the Black community, you have the Divine Nine, which are all of the Black fraternities and sororities. Those are your leaders in the communities. You also have the Masons. Prince Hall Masons is even older than the fraternities. The fraternities are 100, 115 years old. The Masons and the Order of Eastern Stars, which is the female equivalent of the Masons, are also older. So what we've done is put together a coalition of all of those groups, in addition to working with the Georgia Project and the People's Agenda and others, 100 Black Men of America, which has several chapters in Georgia, and 100 Black Women. We've coordinated our efforts along with the churches and places of worship in those counties to target the community. And it's been very effective in tying our efforts together. It's important that we do the same thing now going into the runoff. We've already started those plans we're started with voter registration. We were out this past weekend at a variety of locations, including virtually all Walmarts in the metro area that we got approval to be in the parking lots doing voter registration. We'll start up phone banking, virtual phone banking, where we'll have a phone banking platform that will allow anybody in the country to join in with us to do phone banking, targeting two tiers of voters. One, those Black voters who did vote in the general. And also we're gonna go after some moderate propensity voters that did not vote for whatever reason. We're going to target them as well. So we'll be reaching out to groups like yours and others to do to start up with phone banking. As you know, early voting starts on December the 14th in Georgia for the runoff. We'll ramp that up in the next couple of weeks after we finish up with voter registration, which ends on December the 7th. So we have a game plan where we'll be tying all of these groups together. First, we're doing the voter registration to go after the critical component that Andrea was talking about, and then all hands on deck for early voting. We think early voting is key because we're in the middle of a pandemic, and what we found is there's so much concern. And what we want to tell people is, you know, we ran a Plan Your Vote campaign, where we would go and we would have Zoom meetings with churches and with all of these various groups and get people to start looking at planning your vote right now. Meaning, how do you feel about voting? Do you trust the post office or not? Do you feel comfortable getting in line? If you want to vote by absentee ballot, do you have drop boxes in your community? So we want you to look at all of those things, and we'll be having that kind of educational involvement starting within the next week or so that we can get people to understand how to safely and securely execute their right to vote. And we will be out there with them. The other thing that we'll be doing, again, because the ads don't work, but what does work is when we're out in the community. So we'll be doing, once we get nailed down exactly when early voting is going to occur on the weekends, what was very successful in the general was that we did caravans, we did parties to the polls events on Saturdays, souls to the polls events on Sundays. And on the parties to the polls, we did events contiguous to or right across the street from early voting sites that were open for weekend voting. And we had great crowds out. We socially distanced, did everything to stay healthy. But we ran those in all 19 counties. So we intend to do that once again. And we're gonna bolster that now with a more aggressive walking campaign, canvassing. We got some young folks who are healthy that are gonna be out doing that. We're about to order a couple of 100,000 door knockers and hangers so we can get out in those in those communities that Andrea was talking about, were lower propensity areas where the percentage of the turnout was 60% or less. A lot of those are in our metro counties here, and we're gonna, like Clayton and South Fulton. Those were those dramatically underperformed. If we can get that performance up, that could be another 40 or 50,000 votes. Wow. Right in those two targeted areas that we could turn. So we'll be doing aggressive walking canvassing in those areas starting in another couple of weeks. So we're excited about where we are. We know that we can turn. A couple other things real quick. The great thing about having the Biden election come out the way it did over Trump in the general is that we know that we can win in the Senate. It's just a matter of if we do the work as hard as we did in the general and get these people back out, we know that we can win. People split their votes in many cases. That's the reason Ossoff and Warnock underperformed, is because a lot of people split votes, and that was probably 30 or 40,000 for Ossoff and another 50, 60, 70,000 for Warnock.
Let me jump in. Cheryl Moses, are you still with us? Cheryl Moses? I know she said she's got to leave, but I wanted to see, oh, she had to leave. Okay. Ray, is there anything further? And then
That's it in a nutshell. I'll put my email address and phone number in the chat. Anybody that we need volunteers, we certainly need donations in order to cover the cost of, you know, putting these events on. As an example, we'll have food trucks, we'll have DJs and music at these events. That's what gets our people out.
Okay, so you'll put your links in the chat, and Andrea, you'll put your links in the chat. I hope you can both stay. We've got, Emily Levy, and then Danny Paul Nelson, and we'll continue with this. Those of you who've been, you know, wanting things for this to be an action call, this is where the action certainly is. This is right in the heart of the Georgia election, which is, as we all know, is right in the heart of everything. So Emily Levy and then Danny Paul Nelson.
Yeah, I have.
Sarah Moses had to leave. I hope we have her back next week. Yes, go ahead, Emily.
I have two questions for Ray. One of them could be for Andrea too. So I know that you said that events and feeding people work better than TV ads. Clearly you both have experienced that one-on-one contact works. Are there other things that you think work the best? I'm one of the things I'm wondering is what you see as the most powerful statement to make in however the contact is made, like what's the content of the statement that you find to be most persuasive right now at getting people to decide to vote in the runoff?
It's relational in the community as our experience is. Meaning that the people who can relate to one another, and that's why we want to have intergenerational folks in contact, number one. And then it's all about, many of our people have been subject to the voter suppression, disenfranchisement, and have a concern, especially among the young people, have a concern about whether or not it's worth it in any way for them to vote. And so we need to make the arguments personal. We need to make the arguments about how voting will impact them. So in other words, if you want, you can talk about healthcare and broad issues and so forth, but the first thing is, if you want another stimulus check, if you want to see unemployment extended, if you want to see the eviction moratorium extended, all of those specific things can only happen if these two Senate races go the way we want them to go. And so when you bring it down to a very tangible level about what's happening in their household or what could the economic impact could be on their household, that from our standpoint makes a difference.
So that's focusing more on who people would vote for than specific, which I'm just wondering because of having to be nonpartisan and how some of our organizations do their work.
I didn't have to make it about, you look at the candidates and you determine who do you think is going to be for making those provisions law versus who would not out of those two sets of candidates. We're 501c3 as well. So okay. We're going to operate in a nonpartisan basis. But our door hangers are going to respond to people on that level, on be very specific about pocketbook issues. A lot of our younger voters, especially the Black male voters, they don't understand that it's not necessarily on these two races right now, but you have talked to them about who picks the DAs, who picks the magistrate judges, who, you know, all of those things that impact our people each and every day. They don't understand that they have a voice in that. And our overarching mantra is, you know, make your voice count. And it'll have a direct impact on your life.
Ray, we have about four questions.
I got to go to Danny Paul Nelson.
Okay.
And then the Henny Tripp. Danny Paul is representing the indigenous community. We have Tatanka on with us to talk about last week about the effort. Danny has just been in Georgia. And then Henny Tripp has a report about the Muslim community and how they're interacting. Emily, it's great to have you on. Really great to bring you and Ray and Andrea together. And now Danny and Hetty are both representing other constituencies. Danny, you're also in a car. I hope you're not driving. Tell us what's going on.
Thank you, Slugo. And I'll keep this brief, in part because I think Andrea and Raymond need as much support as possible. And I don't want to take away from that in any way. I did have a chance to briefly speak with Raymond while I was in Atlanta this weekend. My partner on the ground here is the Indigenous Peoples Movement organizers who I worked with back in early 2019 to put together the Indigenous Peoples March in DC. Maybe many of you remember that Nathan Phillips, the elder from the Ponca tribe in Nebraska, was accosted by those Catholic Covington kids. And that became a huge viral event that came out of that march that we put together then. So the organizers of IPM are pretty effective in Georgia. And I'm just thinking through right now how to most effectively support Raymond and Andrea and people like them. I'll just very briefly mention that we have, at Standing Rock, we still have our phone bank and we have we have about 10,000 phone numbers we've identified inside the voter file, 4,000 of whom are identified as Native in some way. And about 6,000 who identify as environmental voters who, for whatever reason, are not certain to vote. There are different criteria that we can use to identify insecure voters who need to be urged and coached. So our intention is to activate those 10,000. But I'm also, I'd like to speak to you again, Ray, and perhaps with you as well, Andrea, about how we can leverage our list, because we have 75,000 engaged supporters via email and more than 250,000 on social media. I'd like to figure out how we can partner with you, perhaps this national phone bank where you allow people to kind of come in from wherever they happen to be and make calls. That's sounds like a very sophisticated operation, and maybe we can leverage our 75,000 emails to be useful in that endeavor. So I'll leave it at that. I did spend the weekend at a Black-owned farm on the outskirts of Atlanta. There's a lot of organizers, a lot of activists connected to the people that I know, and I will be making sure to translate with and for them anything that I learned through my discussions with Raymond and others.
And Danny, your Indigenous network, if you will put that in the chat, please. My understanding is that the Indigenous some organizations, which I don't know who they are and we should know who they are, did phone banking to the Indigenous community during the general election. Is that true?
That is correct. No, we were able to make about 250,000 phone calls into battleground states like Arizona We didn't make any calls into Georgia during the general, but we're going to pivot now and focus on especially the indigenous population in Georgia. Unfortunately, there are no federally recognized tribes in the state. So there's no, there's not the same kind of organization that you have in places like Arizona, but we can still identify people who are native in the voter file. And like I said, we've identified about 4,000 of them so far.
Wow, fantastic. And we all know that in Arizona, the indigenous vote certainly made a significant difference.
It made the difference.
May actually have swung the state.
It made the difference. If you do the math, it's not the only constituency that made the difference, but it is one of them that did.
Very good. Thank you, Danny Paul. Let me go to Hattie Tripp now. Hattie, you have a report. You're in Minnesota about the
First, Slago, I want to talk about my organization, which is the National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum. And we've been doing phone banking in Georgia with the Asian American community. We're doing it in 15 languages, particularly with the South Asian groups, mainly in Atlanta. So I want to connect them with you, Andrea, and Reverend Wright McClendon, if I can do that. And then we partner with the Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE. And so I get their newsletters, and they have a Georgia chapter of CARE with CARE Georgia. So that's Council on American Islamic Relations, the Georgia Muslim Voter Project, and IMAN Atlanta, with several Georgia mosques. Andrea, are you in connecting with them too?
No.
Okay, if I could just connect you and then we can go from there, would be great. So they are doing a formation of Muslims for Georgia, nonpartisan coalition, maximizing turnout among the state's registered Muslim voters. So, you know, every facet will make your diamond.
Yes. Thank you. Great. Wonderful.
Absolutely. There was a note in the chat, I can't resist, a historian said that Andrew Jackson made sure that there were no Native Americans in Georgia. I will say that when the Trail of Tears happened in 1838 and the Cherokee and the other tribes were driven out, many of them actually fled into the forests and did not go to Oklahoma. There's actually a town in North Carolina called Cherokee. So they did not get them all. There are Native indigenous voters still in Georgia, thankfully. Myla Reason, did you have something? Then Gary Crane, Myla?
Okay, Harvey, can you hear me now?
Yes,
I just wanted to ask both Ray and Andrea about whether or not it is too late for voters in Georgia to request the mail-in ballot in time to actually vote in the runoff. And would this be a good time also to ask, because Greg Palast has been saying that so many mail-in paper ballots were disqualified, that at this time, it's more likely that your vote will be counted if you vote, use the electronic versus the paper ballot, so that's the question. Was that clear enough?
Yeah, so the question is, let's repeat that. Greg has asked and Myla has repeated, is it better now in Georgia to await a paper ballot or to go in and vote on the machines? What's the status of the machine voting versus paper balloting in Georgia? Andrea or Ray?
Go ahead, Andrea.
I am not a fan of vote by mail. And my reason, especially right now, is the timing is tight. And administratively, they can decide we're just not going to mail the ballots and create a lot of confusion is my big concern, that we are turning very, very tightly, that people didn't automatically get the application. So they've got to get the application, turn it in. Right now, five, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 vote by mail ballots, applications are in.
So if someone in Georgia gets a ballot in the mail, should they—
then they're good. Then vote it, put it in a drop box. But again, even drop boxes have a certain level of vulnerability. Georgia doesn't seem to want people to take the vote by mail ballots in during early voting, which many, many states do. They say, just bring it in during early voting. Georgia's got these drop boxes.
Okay. Thank you, Myra. Does that answer your question?
Ray, if you got different feelings, I'd be very, very interested. Again, my—
Sure. No, and Andrea, I feel essentially the same way you do. What we try to do is just educate people. And when we lay the facts out, most of them said, and we had this happen in the general, most of them said—
Don't interrupt.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Ray.
Most of them said, hey, you know what? I requested an absentee ballot, but when I get it, I'm going to take it in because yeah. I just don't feel comfortable either with the post office or with what's going on around drop boxes, as Andrea just said. And so they will go ahead and just take them in. So we prefer— what we say is vote the way you feel most safe. But if we had to recommend the top way, early vote. And you're going to feel the best, early vote.
Yes.
Danette, yes. Sorry to cut you off, Danette.
Oh, yeah, sorry about that. Well, we have Brian and Gary, they've been waiting quite a while, and then Ray Lutz.
Okay, that'll do it.
Brian, I'm trying to respect the staff.
Yeah, fine. Brian, Gary, and Ray. And then I want to turn to Joel Siegel and Mike Hurst. We're going to talk a bit about how we take action and where people can donate to the various groups. And Bob Fetrakis is with us as well, but let's do Brian, Gary, and Ray. Go ahead, Brian.
Okay, thank you. One housekeeping measure: for some reason, Ray's phone number that he posted on the chat, or somebody posted on the chat, doesn't seem quite right. It starts out with a 4 and then another 4. Okay. But anyway, if somebody could look into that. But the main reason I called is, so like, I'm this 73-year-old white guy out here in Colorado, and I'm just wondering two things. One is, phone banking, is there some— how receptive are voters or potential voters to, you know, people like me calling them from out of state? Is that an issue at all?
Andrea, do you want to answer?
No, not an issue. No. Otherwise, we wouldn't do it. No.
No.
Okay. What else then?
Okay. Just the other question is, we've got a number of groups that are doing phone banking. Is there some way that a person should choose amongst them, or what would you recommend?
There's two main types of phone banks: phone banking for the candidates. When you're phone banking for a candidate, you're selling something, you're going to get more voters hanging up. The NAACP and my organization, we are providing voter services, so we get very few hangups. Also, I'm only calling voters of color. Ray, I don't know if you're using the expansive or just calling black voters.
Same as you.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So we need to expand that if we can. Thank you for that call, Gary Crane.
Yeah, just real quick, for Andrea and Ray, is there any need for any out-of-state senior age white guys to go to Georgia? Because I understand you both want to focus on young people, and also you're worried about us older guys getting COVID. But if we're willing to take the risk, we're always wearing masks. And I'm just wondering if there are a lot of potential senior age Democrats that need to be reached.
Absolutely. We'd love to have you. Just reach out. We're definitely going to be doing more canvassing this time around. We've had a lot of interest from folks that want to come in from out of town. We just want to be mindful of the pandemic and the different issues related to that. So, but if you're fine with it, we're going to need the help, because we're going to have to do a lot more canvassing in those targeted areas that we alluded to.
I'm also trying to get Daniel Nelson's contact information. I've chatted him a few times, but I don't think he's seeing the chat.
And we are out of time. If you guys are interested, I do have a piece up at Reader Supported News about the film about the Chicago 7. There's also a piece about Trump there. And just remember, the world would be a very different place if the election protection movement had not done what it has done over the years. Thank you, Laura. Thank you, Mike, Steve, Bob Fetrakis, Joel Siegel. Thank you for your excellent work. Joel is going to be focused from now on gerrymandering. And I'm estimating it's going to take us 4 years to make a big difference with gerrymandering. I think we can have an impact in the next 4 years, and it'll probably take about 8 years to get rid of the Electoral College, but I think we will. Emily, thank you for coming on. Everybody, John Brakey. I started to burn many things we found, but don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world.
Well, we multiplied, we needed more. The rich got rich, the poor got sore. The fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high, and so they gave nuclear power a try. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world.
But the nuclear plants were built in haste, with too many risks and no place for waste. And so from Seabrook to Shoreham Town, we have to shut those new plants down. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world.
Now we're fighting wars over oil and gas. No matter who wins, it will not last. The earth is scarred, the planet is warming. Don't you think that all of it's a great big warning?
Don't you know?